This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Okay, Parshas Bo. Three ideas to share this evening. The first one, I'm cheating a little bit because this pasuk that I'm going to be focusing on is really not from Parshas Bo, but it's part from Parshas Va'era last week. But it's certainly connected to the sedras that we're in. Shmos, Va'era, Bo, the beginning of Sefer Shmos, we're talking about the Geula. And it's, you know, yeah, on Sunday was Rish, was it Monday, was Rish Chodesh. Which means we're 2 months away from Rosh Chodesh Nisan, so this is already, we can start thinking about Seder nights, and this is certainly an interesting theme to explore. It's the Dadad Lashonus of Geula. And the reason why I'm bringing it, A, because it is connected to the Parshas that we're doing, but B, Reb Aaron Lapiansky from America was here in London last week, and he came to school on Sunday. We had time to sit with him and spend time with him, which was fabulous, and he spoke to the boys at one point, and he mentioned this idea, and he made reference to the Hakdama of the Ramban in Sefer Shmos, which we spoke about 2 weeks ago. And his idea, although he just sort of just tangentially mentioned the Ramban, I think what he said fits in very so beautifully with it. It's worth exploring what he said, and then we'll move on to a couple of other ideas which are squarely to do with our parsha. So we know that there are four expressions of Geula. It's based on the pasuk in last week's Sedra. The pasuk says in Shmos Perek Vav, pasuk Vav, if you're listening online, please email me at j.golker@gmail.com. I'll send you the handout. Lochein, emor livnei Yisrael ani Hashem, vahitzeisi eschem, that's the first expression, mitachas sivlos Mitzrayim, I will take you out of the burdens of the peer of Egypt, vahitzalti eschem, it's the second expression, I will save you, me'avodosom, vago'alti eschem, I will redeem you, Bizraya Natuya, Bishvatim Gudailim, and then the next pasuk, Velokachtes Chemni Lo'om, Isim Yalilakim, etc., etc. And I will take you out. Now, two interesting Balaturim. The first Balaturim, just astonishing, you know, the Balaturim sometimes comes up with gematrias, which are quite breathtaking. The Balaturim, I think I may have mentioned before, I always like to say it when I mention a Balaturim. There's another one on the next page, and Mr. Shem will get there. But the Baal HaTurim, he's famous for writing the Tur. The Tur is one of the classic Halacha Sfarim written, you know, this, which precedes the Shulchan Aruch. In fact, the authors of the Shulchan Aruch, the Rabbi Yosef Kaira, the Machaba, and the Darkei Moshe, the Ramah, Rabbi Moshe Izlis, they wrote their Pirushim on the Tur. He was the first one to codify Halacha into the four sections that we have today, Arachayim, Chishim, Mishpat, Evan Ezer, and Yerodea. And his classification stands. And the commentaries of the Beis Yosef and the Darkei Moshe, Yosef Kaira and the Moshe Isilis, the Mechaba and the Ramah, are commenting on the Tur. Now the story, the Tur was the son of the Rosh. The Rosh was one of the three great Rishonim upon which the Shulchan Aruch is based, the Rambam, the Rif, and the Rosh. And he was one of the great Ashkenazi leaders of the Rishonim, one of the great Rishonim. And he had, I think, four sons. And one of them was, I think it was Rabbi Yaakov, the author of the Tur, the Baal HaTurim. And legend has it, I don't know if this is verified, but the story that my father used to tell us, that he heard from Rabbi Alan Cohen, the late Rabbi Alan Cohen, was this, that his father, the Rosh, once said to his son, you know, you're focusing on Halacha the whole time. Maybe you should focus a little bit on other things, on Chumash, on Tanakh, and other things. I'm sure this conversation has happened down the generations many times. Yeah? Halavai, there should be our conversations, our concerns. You're focusing too much on X, focus on Y. Anyway, the Baal HaTurim felt that he had done it. So he didn't want to argue with it. He just showed his father the next day. They spent the whole night. He wrote up the Baal HaTurim. It's a very short sefer. Baal HaTurim is you know, it's very, very short. It used to be, I think, in the Art Scroll Chumash, you had just the Art Scroll Chumash, the Chumash, the English, the Targum, Rashi, and the Baal HaTurim. It's a very beautiful and very popular sefer. So that night he stayed up the whole night, and again, this is hundreds of years before the printing press. He wrote out his sefer on a cloth, imagine Megillas Esther, and he left it on his father's shtender. When his father came the next day, he saw that his son had indeed not abandoned the study of Chumash. And some of the gematrias and some of the things, the comments are short, but there's a lot going on. So here's a good example. Says the Baal HaTurim, the four expressions of Geula, Vitzalti, Vigalti, Vilokachti, Begematria, they come to Zeh Oni B'Yisrael Lo Yifchasu Lo Me'arba Kosei Shel Yayin. The four expressions of the Gula, the Yerushalmi says, that's one of the reasons why we have four cups of wine on Seder night. So the gematria of these four expressions come to the following line, Zeh Oni B'Yisrael, this poor person in Klal Yisrael, Lo Yifchasu Lo Me'arba Kosei Shel Yayin. Even he shouldn't have less than four cups of wine. Now there's a note in the art scroll Balaturim explaining the exact words they use and how we get there, but we're talking in the region of 2060, 2067, something like that. He's got a long note explaining exactly how you get there. But either way, that's the first point. Now, the next point is the key point that I want to take out. He then says, Vaitseisi Vitzalti Vigalti Lakachti, Arba Lashon Shel Geula, Keneged Arba Malchus. These four expressions of Geula correspond to the four Golias that we've experienced. The way to remember the Golias are Ve'ela Shmois Bnei Yisrael Haboim Mitzrayim, in the present tense. Boim are the Rosh Tevas of the four Golias, Bovel, Edoim, Yovon, and Modai. That's the way to remember it. Edoim, of course, is the last one. Now, listen to what he says. Uba'achron Ksiv, in the four expressions, the final expression, the fourth expression, is V'lokachti, Keneged Edoim, which is the longest and most difficult of Golas that we're still in. V'alkein k'siv beiv lokachti. That's why it says lokachti about Edoim ka'odam lokech b'chazaka, like a person who's taking something with force. Shehu kosha mikulam, because that is the most difficult expression. V'lokachti is the strongest expression, and therefore it connects to Edoim, which is the longest and most difficult of Golas. Now, two questions. Question number one, why is it that of the four Lashonis of Geula, three are put in one Pasuk, and V'lokachti is put in the second Pasuk? Yeah, you see the first box where Seisi V'tzalti V'ga'alti is put in Pasuk Vav. In Pasuk Zayin, V'lokachti Meschem Li. Why is that put in a separate Pasuk? Second of all, it seems strange. I understand that Golas Edom is the longest, most difficult of Golias, but the expression of V'lokachti doesn't seem to be the strongest expression. Of the four expressions, it seems to be the least strong. You know, the others seem more glamorous and more, you know, Vaitseisi, I took you out from there, Vitzalti, I saved you, Vagalti, Velokachti is an expression we use that you take someone from A to B. Doesn't seem that sort of, exciting. So why is it the strongest? Why does the Balaturim call it the strongest expression? So, Rabbi Lopiansky quoted a Maharal, and this is what ties into this Ramban that we mentioned a couple of weeks ago. He says something very, very interesting. The Maharal says, what is Golas? HaKadosh Baruch is redeeming us from four different exiles. The context of these four is the redemption from Mitzrayim. But what exactly is Golas? So he says, the Maharal says, that Golas means a person is not in their context. That's how he coined it. What does that mean? So he gave the following marshal. Imagine you see a ship. Where do you normally see a ship? Sailing in the ocean. If you see a ship not in its context, on dry land, it looks a fish out of water, totally out of place. But more than just being out of place, it's not really a ship. It's just a big chunk of metal. It's only a ship when it's in water, when it's in its correct context. We were away for a few days in the winter holidays, and we went somewhere on the south coast, went for a nice walk. At one point, the tide was way out. So there was like sand, wet sand for a long stretch, and there were some boats there. Now we know that just wait a few hours, the tide will come in and the boats will be, but when they're on dry land, they're out of context. Golas is when a person is not in their context. Now, interestingly, the words Golas and Geula, redemption and exile, contain root letters of Gimel and Lamed, which Gal means some form of movement. Gal. Gal always means some sort of movement. Now, the longer something is out of context, the more difficult it is to put it back in its context. Imagine a person who grew up in a sort of a civilized society, and then he was thrown into the jungle. The longer he's in the jungle, and he adapts to this very uncivilized, difficult existence, the harder it will be for him to reacclimatize to civilized life. If you're there for half an hour, a day, it won't have that impact and therefore less difficult. But if you're there for years, and you're there for 2,000 years, then it's very difficult to reacclimatize to the correct context. Therefore, the final expression of Gula, which parallels the fourth Golius, which is Edom, is going to be the most difficult because it's putting a person back into their context. And moreover, it means the following. In terms of chinuch, it's very easy just to slam and say no, no, no. But real chinuch is not just the sur meirah of saying no, but it's the asei toiv. And what is the asei toiv? Telling the Talmud or the child what their correct context is. Every person has got their own abilities, their talents, their potential, and taking that child and putting them in their correct context, that's what real chinuch is. So the velokachti is taking Klal Yisrael and putting them in their correct context. Now, in light of that, he made reference to the Ramban. Now, this is the Ramban we mentioned a couple of weeks ago. The Ramban, in the beginning, in his Hakdama to Sefer Shemos, says famously that Sefer Bereshis is called Sefer Yetzirah. That's the creation of the world, creation of man, and etc., etc. What is Sefer Shemos? He says, Binyan HaGolos of Ge'ula. Sefer Shemos deals with Golos and Ge'ula. He says the Ramban there in the third box on the page, Vahine HaGolos Einein Nishlam Ad Yoim Shuvam El Mekoimo. When is the Golos over? When they come back to their place, and it doesn't mean a geographical homecoming. That's part of it, but that's not it. It doesn't mean a political homecoming. Again, maybe that's part of it, but that's not it. What is it? It's Shuvam El Mekoimom Ve'El Malas Avosim Yoshuvu. It's returning to the very lofty, eminent levels of the Avos, which effectively means Hashruas Hashchina. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu lives with us. That's what it means. That a total connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which basically is the way the Avos lived. So that is what real Ge'ula is. And therefore, the benchmark of Hashruas Hashchina is the very supreme, lofty level of the Avos. And that's why, by the way, half of Sefer Shemos deals with the Mishkan. Because what is the Mishkan all about? Where the Hashruas Hashchina, the tangible presence of the divine presence, is there. That's what real Ge'ula is. Ge'ula is, says the Ramban, when you have the Vishav HaKadosh Baruch Hu V'Hishre Shechinosa B'nehem, when the divine presence, the Shechina, is back with us, and we return El Ma'ilas Avosim, he says it twice in this Hakdama. And therefore, the Pasuk splits the first three and the fourth one, because the first three are the no-no-nos, are the sumera. The fourth one is the velokachti, which is a very thematically a very different one. And moreover, it's actually the most difficult, because it's easy to say no, but the hardest thing is to take someone who's been out of context for a long time and to put them back into their context. And that's why the Baal HaTurim means that velokachti is the most difficult, she'u kasha mikulam, he says. So some very interesting thoughts, which to do with the beginning parashas of Sefer Shemos. Okay, let's press on. So in Perek Yud Pasuk Ches, we have continuing discussion dialogue between Moshe Rabbeinu and Paroi. Now, the pasuk says, "Vayushav." Es Moshe v'es Aaron el Paro, they come back to Paro. By Yom Aleim, and Paro says to them, "Luchu ivdu es Hashem lekeichem, go serve your God. Miva mihochim." Fine. Who exactly is going? And Moshe says in the beginning of the Sedra, "Binareinu v'zkeinenu neilech, with our going, with our youth and with our elders, b'vaneinu v'neseinu, b'tzenem v'kareinu neilech kichag Hashem lanu." Yeah, famous pasuk. Now the Baal HaTurim says something fascinating. Look at this. Next, second box on page paragraph 2. Amar Paro leMoshe. Paro, you know, we picture him sort of as this cartoon character, this evil, wicked, crazy person. But he was a wicked person, but he was a clever, wicked person. He knew, and he could tap into astrology, and we'll see. He knew what was going on. Says the Baal HaTurim, Amar Paro leMoshe, Ma atem mevakshim kol kach lo leches. Why are you so keen to go? Do you think you're really going to get into the land of Eretz Yisrael? He knows that the Dor HaMidbar are going to die in the Midbar. So why are you making such a fuss to go into Eretz Yisrael? You're not even going to make it there. Mi v'mi holchim. Who's going to go already? Ki kulam yomusu b'midbar. They're all going to die in the Midbar. Chutz mi Yeshua v'kalif. So you see, Paro knew that all the men are going to die in the Midbar. The only two who are going to survive are Kalev and Yehoshua, because of the Meraglim is the reason why we didn't go into Eretz Yisrael. The extra 40 years is because of them. The two people who were spared from that Gezerah were Yehoshua and the Kalev. They were the two spies who came and reported positively about Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, that's what the Baal HaTurim is saying. Now, look at this. Mi v'mi holchim, begematria, the words mi v'mi holchim, has the same gematria as Kalev or Ben Nun. So he's saying to Moshe Rabbeinu, mi v'mi holchim, who exactly is going? Why are you making such a big fuss to go into Israel? Your menfolk are not going to get in there. And mi v'mi holchim, the only one who are going to be going is Kalev and Yehoshua Ben Nun. Mi v'mi holchim, the same gematria as Kalev and Ben Nun. Now, that explains Moshe Rabbeinu's response. For Heshiva Moshe, Moshe Rabbeinu responds, no, bin Arenu v'skeneinu neilech. We're going with our youth and with our elders, i.e., kilo nigzra gezeira lo apochus mebenkof, because the gezeira not to go into Eretz Yisrael does not apply to anyone who's less than 20 years old, v'loy al yos meben samach, nor on anyone who is more than 60 years old. So there's a lot of people who are going to be going. Our youngsters are going to be going. Our elder generation are going to be going. So therefore, bin arena is kenen melech. So you see a very different interpretation of this dialogue according to the Baal HaTurim. Fascinating. Okay, let's move on to Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Aleph. The Pasuk says, Vayoyme Hashem el Moshe. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, Oid nega echad ovi el Paro. One more affliction I'm going to bring on Paro. Va'al Mitzrayim achrichin yishalach eschem, and afterwards he will send you. Daber no ba'oznei ha'om. Speak to the people, to the ears of the people. V'yishalu ish me'esri ehu. Each man should borrow from their friends, from an Egyptian. For Isha Miyesra Usa, and a woman from the Jewish people should borrow from her Egyptian friends. Klei chesef uklei zahav. Right now, this is going to be the fulfillment of the promise to Avram Avinu, v'yetzu b'rechush gadol. They'll go out with tremendous wealth. The difficulty with this pasuk is the word v'yishalu. A shoyel means a borrower. So they're going to borrow from their friend. Who's borrowing? You only borrow when you intend to give back. Klal Yisrael are going out with this wealth. No one intends to give anything back. So why use the expression for Yishalu Ishmi Yisrael? You're going to borrow from your friends. No one's borrowing this. What's going on? Interestingly, just by the way, the word, I mean, Lashon HaKodesh is remarkable, that the word Shoyel, I just mentioned, the borrower, is of course everything in Lashon HaKodesh, the word's always connected. Shoyel means to ask. She'ela. So what is the connection between the word shoyel, to ask, someone who asks a question, and a shoyel, a borrower? So Moshe Shapiro used to say the common denominator between the two is that they both have a lack. When you ask a question, there's a bit of knowledge you're lacking. When you borrow something, there's something you're lacking. So the thematic connection between the two is exactly that. There's something missing, mashal chaser. So shoyel, that's the connection between the two. Okay, now. But the question is, what is the appropriateness of the word v'yishalo over here? No one's borrowing anything. So, two answers I want to share with you. One is a sort of a lomdisha answer that I saw in the writings of the Chemdas Shlema. This was brought in the Sefer Meshulchan Gavoya. And the second is more of a Musa type of answer, but both very interesting answers. The Chemdas Shlema says the following. Listen to this, fascinating. So this is the second box in paragraph 3. Madua nizkaku little davka b'hasheila. Why were they instructed to take klei kesef klei zov, the payment for decades of slave labor? Why were they instructed b'davka b'hasheila, by borrowing, the expression of borrowing, when they should have just taken it? V'lo b'matona l'netzach. Not an eternal matana. This is what he says. Elo. Mekivan she'ne'en shu ha-mitzriyim b'misa. Since the Mitzriyim had a gezeira, they were punished, they were going to be killed. V'halochahi, there is a halocha, called kimle b'drabimine. Now this is a technical Gemara term. Kimle b'drabimine means that if a person is liable for two punishments, and one of them is the death penalty, and one is a monetary payment, you only get one penalty. He'll be chayav misa, and that will absolve him of the monetary payment. Now, the best example I can think of is something which Rabbi Bitton, do you remember Rabbi Bitton? He's alive and well, he's living well in Eretz Yisrael, but he was a legendary teacher in Hasmonean primary for decades, and in Minerva primary as well. And he gave the following mashal. He would say, imagine a man, a criminal, goes along and he shoots a person, and he kills him. He is chayv two things. Number one, is chayv misa for murder. And number two, he's chayv because he ruined the guy's suit. Right? He had a nice new suit, and he's just made a horrible hole in it, and he needs to pay for that suit. Kimle midarabimine means that he is chayv misa, that will absolve him of the financial penalty of paying for that suit. Kimle midarabimine. Now, says the Chen Dashlema, after Bnei Noach, and this rule applies to Bnei Noach, to Gentiles as well, Shuv lo hoya nitein lechayv imamen, applying this rule to the Mitzrayim, if they're chayv misa, then they are exempt from any monetary payments. The payment for the slave labor of decades that Tal Yisrael were owed, they've now absolved from. Lochein, Heron, Makadish Baruch Hu, Makadish Baruch Hu, therefore instructs Moshe Rabbeinu to tell the Jewish people, Litzel es hakelim b'sheila, take the klei chesef and the klei zohov as payment, as borrowing, not as taking full out. Why? The Hariyadinu, because the halacha is, if the tovea, the claimant, takes the item, we don't take it away from him. So if the guy, the family of the person who's been killed, and his suit has been, and their brother's suit has been ruined, and they're entitled to the money, and this guy's chayv misa as well, if they were to extract money from this criminal, from the murderer, then the halacha is they keep it, they don't take it back. Because as if they borrow it and then lo mafkina minay, we don't take it out from him. V'kiven shekach shuv lo yuchlu ha-mitzrim lo hitzi chavtzeh ha-shulim yad Yisrael. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling Klal Yisrael, I want you to have, not just the mitzrim should get their punishment of Misa, but I want them to pay Klal Yisrael b'ruchush gadol. Therefore, borrow the things, take them, you've got their assets in your hands, and then they can't take it back from you from a sort of a legal halachic approach.
But it's not borrowed from somebody who dies, they don't have to pay back.
Only if they owe you money. In other words, Reuven kills Shimon, right? And he also owes Shimon £100. The example I gave, he shot him and he ruined his suit. So the halach is, he's chayv misa, he's potter from £100. If Shimon or Shimon's heirs, Shimon's dead now, right? But if Shimon's heirs, they go to Reuven's estate and they take assets worth £100, so the halach is, Reuven is not able to extract that back. Even though he wasn't liable to pay it, if Shimon's heirs take the money from him, then they're not. The Reuven has got no entitlement to take it back.
Because he's chayv misa.
The chayv misa absolves him of the payment of £100, but the halach is that if Shimon's heirs would have taken £100, then Reuven is not able to take it back. It's just a quirk, as it were. In other words, the Kirinim of the Rabbin, it tells me, that the Momon absolves him from any payments. So Reuven is Chayv Misa, he doesn't have to pay the £100. But if it so happened, for whatever reason, that Shimon's heirs go into Reuven's house and they take £100, so Reuven is not entitled to take the money back. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Klal Yisrael, the Mitzrayim are going to be Chayv Misa. But I want you to go in and borrow this stuff, because when you do so, they're not going to be able to extract it from you. That's what I'm saying. Okay. The second answer. Chidush Arim, listen to this. This is fabulous. The Chidush Arim says, there's a famous klal. The first time something appears in Torah, it's always telling me a lesson about this topic, about this concept. This is the first time that the Jewish people encounter wealth. This is the first, till now, the formation of the Jewish people has just happened. They've been slaves in Mitzrayim since the inception of their existence. And now they're going to be leaving Mitzrayim. It's the first time they're going to be encountering wealth. This is the first time HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to teach us a lesson. What's the lesson? The lesson is, Yishalu Ishmei Yisrael, borrow it. What does that mean? Says the Chidush Arim, V'halo im hoya rotzen b'shamayim hoya noisen l'lavi ha-Mitzrayim she'idin l'Yisrael. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to have they should go with this rechush, he should have just put it in their minds, they should have just given them the rechush. Why does he, again, the same question, why does he ask Klal Yisrael to borrow from the Egyptians? Eliyeh Shloima Second line of the Chiddush Arim. Shezehoy Hascholos Hashirish Shehochel Lechan Yisrael. This is the first time the Jewish people are encountering wealth. Loirotzo Sheyizdakku Becholev. He doesn't want them to become too attached to wealth. He wants them to have it in the form of a loan where there's a responsibility on the person to give it back. I'll give you a mashal. Imagine you drive a car and you go away for a few days in the holiday. You rent a car in this place where you're going. When you rent this car for a week, you're going to be a bit careful when you sip your coffee and have your lunch in that car. Because you know in a week's time you've got to give it back. I don't want coffee stains all over it. He's gonna charge me for it. If it's my car, I'll be a bit more relaxed about it because it's my car, and if I make stains, then there'll be stains on the seat. What can I do? When you borrow something, you're more hesitant, you're more careful about how to look after it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying to us, have wealth. But when you have the wealth, realize that it's coming from me, and I'm giving it to you to use in the most appropriate way. So therefore have the wealth, but treat it as if you're borrowing it. You're a custodian of this wealth for 70, 80, 90, 120 years, and then that's it. And then you use it in the way that it should be used. And therefore treat it as if it's being borrowed. You know, the Shulchan Aruch says, La'olam ein odom ma'ani min hatzdaka. No one becomes poor from giving tzedaka. Nothing bad, but it's very hard. You tell a kid who's schwitzed and worked and saving up money for whatever it is, and he's earned babysitting money, and after many hours he's earned £100. So that's hard work. You tell him to take £10 and give it to Starker. It's tough, and not just for kids, for anybody. You get your paycheck and you've got to take 10%. The way to look at it is, if you realize that everything comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you earn the £100, really, A, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving me this money, but only 90 of it belongs to me, and £10 is already earmarked for Stocker. It makes it easier to understand. But this whole concept that all the money I have is just a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as if I borrow it, it's on loan to me to use it in the most appropriate way, that makes life a little bit easier. Now, what's interesting, this contrasts with the Makkah of Choshech. How so? You see, I once heard Rabbi Daniel Fine quoted Reb Lippa Rabinowitz. Reb Lippa used to say the following: the Makkah of Choshech, you know, so unless you have a phobia of dark, is it so bad? Is the Makkah of Choshech so terrifying compared to all the terrible ones that have been till now? So Reb Lippa used to say the following: when the archaeologists would find would sort of explore the tombs of the ancient Egyptians, they would find riches buried in the tombs, in the pyramids and in the tombs. Why? Because they measured their wealth and their whole worth by the material possessions which they had. And therefore, during the plague of Choshech, they were detached from their material possessions. And therefore, they were detached from who they were. They were defining who they were and their very worth by their material possessions. When you are on your own, totally detached, it's very difficult. There's no distractions. I've sort of detached myself from my own essence of who I am. That is the contrast of Yishalom. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling us, have the wealth, enjoy the wealth, but don't let it define you, and treat it as if you're borrowing the money, the wealth, the kliches of chizahov, to use it in the best possible way. And the contrast is the Mitzrayim, the Makkah of Choshech was terrifying for them. Because all of a sudden they're disconnected to what they perceive is their real worth, their material possessions. I am my Rolex watch. You detach the person from that, it's terrifying. That's what Lippus used to say is the Makkah of Choshech. That really, it got to who they were, because they define themselves by their wealth. Okay, so let's just summarize the three ideas that we've said this evening. The four Lashemis of Gula. Why is it that the first three, V'yaseitiv, V'yisalti, V'ga'altiv, in the first posuk, V'lokachtiv, in the second posuk, and why does the Balaturim say V'lokachtiv is the most difficult? The Teretz is because there's two stages. There's the Sur Meira, there's the no in Chinuch, but then there's the V'lokachtiv. The real Chinuch is to take, the real Ge'ula, is to take Klal Yisrael and put them in their correct context, to put this, the ship in the ocean and let it sail. That's what the real Gula is. And that's what Velokachti. Velokachti is difficult because you've got to take someone who's been in Golas for 2,000 years and then put them in their correct context. And the correct context is the Mokum of Hashras Hashchina is a spiritual redemption, not a physical or geographical or political one, but a spiritual one, where we're meant to not only have Hashras Hashchina, but we're meant to aspire on Ma'alas Avos and Yoshuvu to the very lofty levels of the Avos. And that's why the first three is stage one in one pasuk, and the Lokachti is in the second one, and indeed the Lokachti is the most difficult. Then we had Mivu Mivu Holchim, the Balaturim, this very interesting idea that the Paro is saying to Moshe, what's the big deal? You're not going to make the land anyway. Mivu Mivu Holchim, Gematria, only two of you are going to make it. Who? Ben Nun, Yeshua, and Kalev. Remarkable. And Moshe Rabbeinu responds, no, Binorin is Kenenu Nelech. There are those who are above 60, less than 20, who are going to join us on the way out. And then you have this very interesting idea, Vishalu Ishmael Sriyehu. Why use the Lashon of Vishalu? Who no one's borrowing anything. So the Chem Dashem comes out with the Lomdus answer that otherwise commonly the Rabbani frustrates the possibility of taking out the wealth. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, borrow it and therefore they won't be able to take it back from you. And then the idea of the Chiddush Arim to teach us that the first time the Torah mentions wealth en masse for Klal Yisrael is teaching us this lesson, how to treat wealth. That you look at it as if you're borrowing it and it's not yours, because it's a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to use it as best as you can. And that's why the contrast with the Makkah of Choshech. Because in stark contrast, the Mitzrayim judged their self-worth according to their material possessions. Choshech detached them from that, and for them, that was terrifying. That's the idea. Okay, we'll leave it there.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.